Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Just take my hand.
You switched songs from the first time. Never mind. They don't know about
that's
the
an alternate
that we've
future
restarted.
That didn't
happen. What's the song name?
What's it called?
I don't know. What is the song called?
Joe goes to the bar.
I think it's
Joe goes to the beach.
Yeah, by the Beastie Boys.
What?
I thought I'm not supposed to say the song name.
Well, you are. What is it?
Oh, Barbaran.
Yeah, Barbaran.
The Beach Boys.
Okay,
that's
all
what
right,
I said. Yeah.
You said something like Barbarossa or something. I couldn't hear it. Either way, how's it going, everybody? You are watching and listening to the Command Zone podcast.
Do you not know the song, Barbaran?
I do know it, but I didn't know the name of it.
You're like musically talented. It's all the words.
Anyway, the person berating me on the podcast right now is one of our oldest friends. We have a very special episode. Oh, but by the way, hi, I'm Jimmy Wong.
Oh, how's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. And yep, our guest is somebody we talk about every single episode of the show, but he hasn't been on in a long time. It's Alex Kessler from the Masters of Modern.
Our sister podcast.
Woo! And Alex is actually one of the two people that is responsible for us being here at all today, because Alex and Craig, who's been on the show many times and Game Nights and whatnot. Oh, Alex, you've been on Game Nights too.
I have. That was, I think, the last time we've all been in the same.
Yeah. They're the ones that got us into Commander. So
true. Very true. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Much appreciated.
It's like everyone out there. Commander parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just like a good Commander parent, it is time for Commander Christmas.
Woo!
Did you bring us gifts?
No, I'm disappointed in you for not knowing Barbaran.
I did know. I didn't know the name of the song.
Let
I was
it go,
singing
guys.
It with
let it go.
You.
I was like, wait, did I not? Was Barbaran not what it,
it was
is?
Very
like,
confusing.
I thought
I was very
just.
I just didn't know what you were saying when
I
you
thought
said
Jimmy.
That.
It was a different name of the song, and Jimmy was like, "No, that's not the name you need to come." So I was thinking,
right.
Like, what else could it be called?
Well, I have a question. How do you guys feel about the August product release versus the November product release?
They did it for a reason this year, right? A specific reason?
Because Iconic Masters
Iconic
is
Masters,
coming out
right.
in November, and they maybe want to try a different spin on the fall
fall
release schedule.
The thing is, I mean, do a lot of people buy the Commander 2017, the Commander yearly product, and go and then play with their friends at their houses over Christmas and the sort of holiday break? Is that sort of why it's effective? Because for me, I really don't care. The earlier, sweet. Let's go for it.
For me, it was kind of always, these were maybe the best Magic the Gathering Christmas gift I could ever ask for.
I agree
with
that.
And because, like, telling my parents, or especially when I was younger, buy me a Magic product for Christmas, I would get like an intro pack or like something that I really didn't want. And
like,
this was like,
sleeves,
oh, this is
right?
like a out of the box, easy to see. They promote it during Christmas, so you know
what
you're
getting.
And it's
one product that's priced about the right amount for
yeah.
a
right,
present.
Exactly. And there's good stuff in it. I want one of these. And I'd even take like a second one if someone gave it to me. So like that's kind of where I was at on it. I think part of the reason was also that last year we had such draft format fatigue during the summer, where we went through
just too
like
many, too
Eternal
many
Masters
yeah.
into
Conspiracy.
Eldritch Moon into Conspiracy into Kaladesh, that like they wanted to mix that, kind of spread that out.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll see. I hope it doesn't affect it. I think the format's gotten so big now that it'll probably be fine either way.
It used to be in the summer. That was like the first two sets, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For summer releases. Yeah. So like,
yes. But the format was way smaller then than it was now. I mean, the last 3 years, Commander's gotten, it's arguably the most popular format, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tied with Limited, right?
Yeah.
Because Standard have had a rough 2 years.
Yeah, had a rough couple years. You know, Modern Legacy, very expensive. So yeah, there's been a lot of polls online that suggest the Commander's like right up there. So we'll see how it does. Speaking of the product and wanting to get it, if you do want to order it, you should definitely go and visit our sponsor, which is cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link, you can be pre-ordering this stuff right now, and you can be getting it basically as soon as it comes out. Card Kingdom ships super, super fast, so it's probably the best place to go online to order it so that you can have it like right away.
Not only that, if you look in front of us, there's a ton of awesome Ultra Pro product, who is the other sponsor of this show. There are custom deck boxes that fit 100 sleeves for every single one of the new Commander products, which is really cool. It's got the art right in front. Ultra Pro is always very timely with this stuff. Every single time a new set comes out, anything new. I mean, in fact, they just announced that for Hascon, they're releasing a limited edition playmats of the Hascon exclusives.
Like the Grimlock and all that.
Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah, and the dinosaur and all that stuff.
If you watch Game Nights, you saw we had the new playmats with all of the commanders on it. So you can sort of theme, if you get you know, the Ur-Dragon deck. You can get the Ur-Dragon deck box. You can get the Ur-Dragon playmat. It makes it very aesthetically pleasing when you're sitting
with
down
the sleeves. Or you could tilt everyone by using the Ur-Dragon playmat, but playing the Kess deck and using a different sleeve and combining them all into the same thing and see if anyone really gets upset because nothing matches.
That's something that Kessler would definitely do, trying to like get in your head. Or
well,
just,
yeah, you play.
Well,
you
turn all your cards upside down as it is.
Not on purpose. It's just, seems I like don't it. Have. You play with the red mat, the red sleeves, the red shirt, and then you come in with like straight blue white control, and they're like, oh.
I just want to aside here. In our play group, you know how sometimes you shuffle your deck and you mess up and some of the cards are upside down and some are right side up and it's like you draw your opening seven and you're like, I want to just destroy myself because it's so like, in our play group, we call that, we say, oh man, my deck got Kesslered. That's what we call it. Yeah. Who Kesslered my deck?
Alex is notorious for just not caring what direction cards are flipped.
I'm ambidextrous in the direction I can read cards.
That's not the right way to use it. Hey,
I'm
the last
dexterous.
You're Kessler.
Kess dexterous.
Oh boy.
Kesslexic.
I'm going. Actually, Kesslexic might be good. It potentially a little offensive. Anyway, the final way you can support the show is directly through Patreon.com/CommandZone. We actually shout out a Patreon person every single week, and that person today is
Travis Drake,
a 2/2 flyer for 3.
Travis, you rock.
Thanks, buddy. All right. So what we are doing today because of Commander 2017 is we wanted you all to have a head start on the game and to be able to jump right into it with a deck that's going to kick butt and is designed around one of the new commanders. Because obviously in every single one of these decks, we have 3 brand new commanders. They're all really exciting. And Kessler, it's only fitting that we bring you in to talk about the card named after you, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so this card's awesome. When I saw it, so I got to spoil this on Twitter for Wizards, and it was when they sent me the card, I verbally squealed out loud in the airport that I was getting on an airplane for. So people looked at me like I was a crazy person. But this card's awesome. It's Snapcaster Mage every turn, and it's named after me.
Yeah.
That's my name.
So do you want to read it?
Yeah, so Kess Descendant Mage.
Dissident
Mage. Yeah, that's, yeah.
You gotta get it all right if it's named after you. Come on.
Legendary creature, human wizard, which is important because it's in the wizard deck. It's 1 color, a blue, a black, and a red. Flying, during each of your turns, you may cast an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard. If a card cast this way would be put into your graveyard this turn, exiled instead. It is a 3/4.
And it's flying.
It does have flying.
A 3/4 flyer for 4 is actually pretty decent stats on something that, you don't care about that part, but
it's, I want the Snapcaster Mage every turn.
I mean, this is, we called it the Caridor for spells.
Yes.
It's slightly different, obviously, because it exiles after you use it, whereas Caridor doesn't.
And there's no cost reduction either.
Well, on the card, right. I think the strategy immediately that comes to mind is similar, right?
All spells. All spells all the time. Get spells in your graveyard with cycling effects, maybe. Or other things. Take extra turns because then you get to do it more.
Right, because you only get to cast a card from your graveyard
once
every
turn. So if you take a bunch of extra turns, then you get extra times to cast stuff out of your graveyard. So it's sweet.
I mean, when you see this effect, this card, on a power level scale, do you put it like right up there? Or is it medium? Like, what are you thinking?
The card seems really high power level. I mean, Snapcaster Mage is one of, if not the best blue creature ever printed, and possibly on the top 10 best non-power 9 spells ever printed in the history of Magic.
I put the Baby Jace up there. Kid Jace up there.
It's not as good as Snappy. Snappy's...
Vryn, if I was doing a top 10 blue creatures list, Vryn's Prodigy would probably make it on there.
Right, but not above Snapcaster.
But Snapcaster is probably number 1.
I mean, having Flash,
one. I think it is
for
1.
For blue? Like, what's the better blue creature?
Clearly.
Delver is maybe up there, but
it's not better.
I mean, it depends on what vacuum you're looking at it in. Yeah, but yeah, Snapcaster is definitely very powerful.
Snapcaster Mage has been the defining card of the format it's in every format it's ever been legal in.
Except for Commander.
But even Commander, it's played.
It's good.
It's
just not defining.
Anyway. Fair.
Not to Vince
We could add 50 minutes later. All right, so how's the deck work?
When I see this card, when I see Kess, I think this can definitely be, like, maybe not tier 1, but like one of the more powerful decks. Because this is the type of effect that we've seen over and over, you know, playing stuff out of your graveyard. Like, those are some of the better decks in the format.
Yeah, to mention it's kind of, you know, the fact that it repeats. It's not like you have to cast an Archaeomancer and buy this card back and then, you know, cast it. You get it every turn regardless after you cast.
Now, I feel like they did try to make the card a little bit more fair by adding that exile clause.
Yes, though there's ways around it. Buyback in general is really good with Kess because it doesn't say exile that card after casting it, as if it would be put into your graveyard this turn. Oh, exile it instead. Wow. So every buyback spell brings it back. So that's definitely like started with, you know,
like T-ball.
Yeah,
man, that's amazing.
Lobbed it.
Good job,
team. Episode's like over.
Yeah, what's the basketball?
It's
one?
Less good when we dwell on it for so long. Yeah, anyway, that is a really interesting interaction. Well, we'll get into that in a minute here.
But yeah, I mean, that's how Snapcaster Mage works, and that's why I first started this being like, okay, let me pump a bunch of big effects into the deck, and I slowly whittled those down as I realized.
As every good commander deck builder does. Yeah.
To like, oh, I probably want a bunch of low, or closer to low CMC side, and then tried then focusing more on what benefits for me casting spells for my graveyard.
So as a general plan, without getting real specific, what was the plan that you built into the deck?
So I like started with, the first thing I did was put every take extra turn effect into the deck, because that was just the first thing that popped out of me. Is like, oh, if I get extra turns, I can keep taking them.
And I can just keep hitting someone for three in the air over and over.
And once I get the 10 man, I can cast Time Warp twice in one turn.
Uh-huh.
But the real thing is that just generally, I started focusing, like I put the new Nicol, like every Nicol Bolas in here originally, because like, ooh, Grixis. I get to finally make a Grixis commander deck, because so people who don't know this, every commander deck I currently have, for the most part, is specifically focused on two color. Mm-hmm. And this is the first card that's been printed that's really, now I'm committed to now just kind of, I'm going to make every color combination, it looks like.
You would be
I'm
that
OCD
guy.
With,
if he starts one, that's probably why he hasn't started before.
Yeah. I'm eventually just going to have to like.
Yeah, you're a completionist.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's why like I'm like slowly just trying to own every modern staple in the format.
Because
like,
you need all the decks.
Yeah, and I just got into Star Wars Destiny after Jimmy recommended it, which is another card game, and like it's expensive. I need to stop. Okay.
but you, so you started with a bunch of extra turn effects, and then that morphed.
I was like, okay, what are really good things? And then I started focusing on what things benefit me from casting stuff out of the graveyard. So I started with Burning Vengeance, I think is what it's called, the enchantment for three that whenever you cast a spell from your graveyard, do two damage.
It's the build around me from
Eternal Masters and Innistrad. And that didn't actually making the final cut, though, the blue
it's
and
just
the
not
blue
enough damage in commander, right?
It doesn't do a whole lot.
Right. Especially when you can, if you could string together, but she says you can only cast one spell from your graveyard.
Yeah. And then the rest of your decks have to build around the two.
And I like actively didn't include a lot of flashback because she lets you do it. I do have a bunch of the Snapcaster Mage effects just because I felt like sometimes she's going to get killed enough that I'm never going to cast it. And I'm unsure how scary she is. Like when I build a commander deck, if my commander is easy to kill, especially one of the new ones, like if my deck is too reliant on it and it ends up being a Xur-esque problem commander, then
a lot of your deck has to be dedicated to protecting it, but you don't know how much to put into protecting it.
Correct. So like I don't know where it's at. So I very much built the deck a little bit to not rely completely on her existing.
I feel like new commanders don't tend to get targeted early. Very early on.
Right.
People don't know yet.
Yeah, they don't understand it.
People don't know yet how good it is, and they'll sort of...
Even year one
they'll
sometimes.
Sort of, yeah, they'll sort of default to, like, well, let me see how bad it is before I know that Rafik is bad, or I know that whatever's bad.
Right. There's some, like, Niv-Mizzet was... Not Niv-Mizzet. Niv-Mizzix. Or Mizzix was a card that, like...
You only have to see
printed,
it get played
like,
one time
I'm
in
good. This thing needs to die. And then, like, Leovold was, like... pretty immediately like, oh, this thing has to die or we all lose the game immediately.
Yeah. Thrasios, I think, has not gotten there yet. I think you should
Thrasios
kill
is a little bit more of a slow burn.
I know, but you still
got to get it out.
You got to
get it out of there.
Yeah. You just got to kill as fast as possible.
So, okay, let's talk about, this is something we like to do really quickly. So I did a statistical breakdown of your deck.
Stats.
That's our segment.
Is there stuff that'll pop up?
Nope. Everything you saw is exactly what happened.
That's exactly.
I mean, maybe something will come up and say stats at the bottom.
Yeah, if you watch the show, you would know what to do there.
So behind on the lingo.
Yeah.
You guys have advanced a lot in the time.
Like, look at where you are. There's a moving camera. There's three of them. Like,
you guys actually move
your
arms.
Like, level up card. You got, like, you know, first round was, like, add two green mana. We'll start doing videos. Now you got all these cameras. There's a camera that's moving around places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are great.
And then we added you in.
Yeah.
Perfect. Now.
Yeah. This is, we're complete.
I should mention that the reason that you specifically are here and the reason that we're doing this is because you are one of the best deck builders we know.
Well,
so
thank you.
We wanted to give you an opportunity to also, you know, have the audience see someone that really knows what they're doing with deck building and have a good idea of how they might approach something like this.
So you're saying all your other guests don't know how to build decks? Is that I'm the best? I've won the championship?
Well, no, they're just not as good.
We're saying we were way too busy to do it ourselves.
Yeah. Read between the lines.
All right. Into the stats portion. So quick breakdown. And again, Alex's deck list will be in the show notes. So if you want to check out the full deck list, you can. But we're going to break down the stats. As always, we like to start with the two pillars, card draw and mana ramp. There's about 9 mana ramp spells. So you're right on line with what we usually like to say, around 10. There's some interesting stuff, and I really like it, like rituals, which we'll get into later, which I did count and would not normally necessarily count in this category. But in this deck, you're onto something that's pretty cool. 10 card draw spells, right on the button. I like it. There's about 5 single target removal spells and 6 board wipes. So you can tell that I think our roots are in the same place as Alex's as far as how we build decks, because these are the numbers we're like always talking about hitting. So, and you know, we didn't talk about this with him. We were just like, build the deck. But Alex is basically like right in line with exactly amount of stuff we normally do.
Proud of that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
I had no idea that these.
Yeah, it gave me goosebumps when I broke it down, because I was like, man, we obviously come from the same place. So
goosebumps. Yeah. Hot diggity.
There's a really good meme of talking about where goosebumps come from, and they're really thousands of little mini goose inside of your skin that when it gets cold, they want to go south for winter and try escaping, and then they pop. Science.
It's true, because they're not down to my legs. My legs did not get any goosebumps.
You're a deck builder, not a scientist. Moving on, there are 6 board wipes in here, which sounds perfectly right. Yeah. And here's
it's
the
low for me, actually. But
yeah, right. Here are the two that really show what this deck is about. There are 6 total creatures.
6 creatures in the entire deck. So yeah. It's the most Alex Kessler thing ever, too.
I like creatures. I just don't
like the combat stuff.
What are they really doing?
Exactly. Well, I mean, you do have a Geist deck that.
Well, he attacks. But
everything
nothing
else,
else
creature,
does.
Yeah.
And here's the big one. Instants and sorceries. There are 43 of them in the deck.
43. I think in the Commander deck building template, we said that when a deck cared about a thing, there would usually be around 35 or so of that thing. And this is pretty close to that. I mean, you know, it's a little more. It's a little heavy. But again, we know Kess as a card says the word instant and sorcery on it.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
So, the fact that there's a ton of them isn't surprising, but it's pretty interesting to see only 6 creatures, which I dig.
And the deck hasn't been goldfish yet, so that number may go down or up depending on. You know,
oh, it's been gold. I have the app I use is lets you goldfish things, so I've goldfished it a lot.
We only talk about one app on this show, Alex.
The Lifelinker app,
of course.
Yeah, I have the super Omega version that lets you.
I was sure you were gonna be. What app is that?
Yeah, that one.
No,
the one with commander damage.
So
no, yeah, there's way ahead. I'm like I live. Technically in 2020. Star Wars 9 was really good, guys. Get ready.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
All right, good to hear. I'm excited about Star Wars 9. All right, let's talk about key cards in the deck. Obviously, as usual, we can't talk about every card, but we're going to talk about some key stuff. I think there's some really interesting stuff in here. I want to start with what I alluded to earlier, which are the rituals.
Yeah.
So you have Dark Ritual. There's Mana Geyser in there. We call a ritual card anytime that's sort of a one-time infusion of mana. So Dark Ritual is the most classic, which is why we call them rituals. It's 1 black mana, and it just puts 3 black mana into your mana pool.
Yep.
And normally not a card in Commander that I would say. In competitive decks, you might run it because you're going to combo off, and you want to do that as early as possible.
Right.
But in your average like kitchen table, most of us, more casual setting, Dark Ritual is just too low impact, or the value's low, because it is card disadvantage, right? You use a card. Mm-hmm. You don't get a card out of it. You get a tempo advantage out of it. You get to do something before you would. So why is our rituals good in this deck where they might not be played in others?
Well, so it's kind of, I went through 3 different versions of where I took the deck. I started with just good stuff. I then went to like, or I didn't start there. I like start with extra turns. I went to like Nicol Bolas cards because Grixis is cool. And then I like got really heavy into artifacts. And then I got a little into Storm and then kind of eventually found my way here.
Rituals, are historically really good in Storm because, right. Again, it's kind of like comboing.
You want to cast as many things as these.
There's
let
a spell
you raise
and
your...
they give you mana to cast more spells, correct. So it works for Storm. But this is not a Storm deck.
No, it's not. Yeah. But the one thing I noticed when playing with them, and I cut down, at one point I had like 6 rituals in the deck, was that they, with Kess in play, very quickly let you ramp up. And also on turn five, you can cast Kess, then cast Dark Ritual, and then kind of chain into...
You can use the mana from the Dark Ritual to recast that Dark Ritual from your graveyard.
Right.
So one Dark Ritual can give you five mana. That's the one spell you get to cast from your graveyard that turn, but that's...
But at the turn you're casting
Kess... That's like Black Lotus power level right there.
That's a lot of mana for one mana.
That's five mana for one mana.
So like, when I was starting looking at that, I was like, oh, rituals can be really good. I don't think you want too many of them, because the reason they're bad in Commander is that they just...
If you ever get four of them in your hand or something, too, it sucks.
Yeah, you're just not doing anything.
Yeah.
Unless your commander specifically does good things with Storm, which is why like I have Aegis built, and it's a totally a Storm deck that I have to troll people that are not nice to me at Commander games.
Aegis is really scary.
Yeah, and the point is, like, if you connect with Aegis and you have a ritual in your hand, they're insane cards. But that's because they have Cascade, which is why there's no actual ritual with Cascade attached to it. But in this deck, being able to get that high is really strong. And sacrificing some of the artifact stuff to raise your spell count, because there's a lot of other cards in the deck that trigger off of spell effects anyways, made more sense. It leaned a little bit more into what the deck was trying to do.
Very cool. There's a card in here that's from, I believe it's Commander product last year. Is that correct?
Yes. The series that has basic land cycling on it.
Right.
Yes.
And this is an interesting include, but it totally makes sense. And it's Ancient Excavation. And both of you are looking for it on your screen right now. But I
got
it. Go ahead. Go ahead.
You go.
It's an instant. Two, a blue and a black for an instant. Draw cards equal to the number of cards in your hand, then discard a card for each card drawn this way. Basic land cycling. You can pay two mana to go find a basic land. Very interesting card because...
It's a wheel type effect.
It's a wheel type effect.
But it's just you. It's not everybody.
And you get to choose which cards you discard.
Right. Well, there's like... In the phases of going through this deck, there was one point where I had like six different wheel effects, and I cut them down. Like, I had all the creature ones. I had the dragon one that I love, but in different decks. And this one was the one that kind of ended up being the perfect card, because this deck has problems in the sense that it's three colors. So getting that third color you need is important. On top of that, what it's doing is perfect. And being able to do that from your graveyard late game, where you're cycling through your deck, you're putting a bunch of spells that you can now cast with your commander in the graveyard, while being able to cycle this and then cast it from your graveyard. So it's kind of like this perfect. And you mentioned before, cycling is going to be a version of this deck that is out there. I don't know if it's the top end of that power level, but it's definitely a fun thing you can do with it. And it's something to focus on when looking at important cards that kind of work with the commander.
Gives you a lot of options, too. If you have Ancient Excavation in your opening hand, you're like, man, I hope I draw one more, two more lands in my next turn. And you don't get it. You have the option at the very least.
I think other than top decking this card, early game, I would almost basic land cycle this every
almost
time.
Almost every time, yeah.
Yeah, anything with cycling that's an instant sorcery in this deck, you can just cycle with no regard because you can still cast it later.
Yeah. So. Unless I'm like flooded.
And there's a ton of ways to get it back, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, so it's not even like you have to use cast it necessarily. Yeah, I like that card a lot.
Both cycling and buyback ended up being the more exciting half of what this deck can do.
Right.
Like, to the extent that the other card that, like, on the extra turn game plan, there's one that has cycling. I think it's Walk the Aeons. You can sacrifice three islands. Like there
with
was
buyback,
a,
yeah.
With buyback, which is like a huge cost. And like this deck probably can't even accomplish that very easily. I don't think I have that many islands in the deck.
Right.
But there's a version of this commander where you maybe want to lean into that and like play Crucible Worlds and like get that kind of going, because that's really strong.
Yeah, let's talk about the buyback thing. We touched on it earlier. Capsize should be on here, and I must have just missed it when I was putting it into the notes. But Capsize is one of the key cards that you mentioned.
Right.
And then and it can just stand in for – and Forbids, and another one. It can just stand in for any buyback card that you've got in the deck, right? Because as you said earlier, if it's in the graveyard, Kess would normally exile it when you cast it because it's going to go back in the graveyard. But if you pay the buyback cost, now all of a sudden it's actually going back into your hand, and you're not losing the card to exile like you normally would.
Right. Forbids specifically is one that's insane because – Once
you
again,
want
the, you want
to,
getting stuff in your graveyard
gosh,
is really good. And the fact that if this gets in your graveyard somehow, you can always just bring it back to your hand.
Oh, that is kind of
like,
brutal.
It does like a, the thing with Forbid that's different is.
It can only use it on your turn with Kess, and therefore countering stuff on your turn is still good, but not even close to as good as countering other people's turns. Yeah,
and if you look at it, like my counter spell number is really low in this deck. Forbid is one because it, and a lot of it is more, can this be used to protect my commander in some ways, or what's the value of doing it on my turn? But like if you're the person before the blue player or the other blue player and you have Forbid in your deck, it's great because
they just can't counter
they can't,
you.
They no longer get to use your turn as their end of turn. I'm going to flash stuff in. They have to wait till the person before you, which gives you a lot of options.
I actually really like that about your deck, that it was low counterspell, and Kess kind of forces that. And again, we're saying this because Kess says
on your
during
turn.
Each of your turns.
Yeah.
So you can't, during Jimmy's turn, use Kessa's ability to cast something out of your graveyard. And so it does sort of create a blue spells deck that actually can't rely on counterspells, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think they've found a way to do that before. So this could be a deck that's very good and still playable in maybe your more casual circles, where we hear a lot of people complaining just about really heavy control counterspell decks, and I don't think that's necessarily a good way to build this deck.
Yeah, and like I built it more in the kind of the mid-rangey blue decks that Modern is filled with these, where counterspells aren't that good in Modern, so people don't rely on them as much. And this kind of feels like that, where it's a tap-out Grixis deck almost.
Well, let's talk about the most redundant effect in the deck, which is take more turns. You've got Time Warp, you have Walk the Aeons, you have Temporal Mastery, Temporal Manipulation. You're taking a lot of turns with this deck because you can cast these cards twice.
Yeah. Taking extra turns effects are probably always broken, and that's like the one side of this deck that probably after playing it a couple times against people is the one I would like
tune down
for social reasons cut, because like I basically at this point just don't want to play against a Narset player ever again, even if you don't have extra turn effects in your deck.
I always say, I will look through your deck and check it to make sure there's no extra turn effects after I kill you. But I'm not taking your word for it.
That's a good line. Right, like you could be lying to me and like...
Or you could not think it's not very many, but five's still a lot.
Yeah, five. They're not that many. And like the one thing I did make sure to focus on is I think there's only Temporal Mastery is the only... take an extra turn effect that exiles it after you cast it.
Right.
And that's because Temple Mastery is, like, dumb. And you want to discard that if it's in your hand. But the other ones are all the ones that you can kind of get multiple repeats out of. So that's definitely the reason that I don't have some of the crazier ones. I also don't have the one that lets you take two extra turns. It's so expensive.
10 mana, yeah.
And it was in the deck when it was more artifact heavy. I had, like, all three Signets. I had, like, five other mana ramp spells. It was almost at 20 ramp spells at that point. And had more of an artifact bend. Pulled that back because it just wasn't doing anything with the commander. And when I would do gold fishing, it would just kind of flood out.
Mm-hmm.
I like this next cycle, increasing ambition and increasing vengeance. So you said you took out a lot of the flashback spells. Obviously, these both have like a rider clause that says if you cast them from the graveyard.
Yes, it's they not do something, flashback.
And you can cast them for their original cost rather than the flashback cost. And both of these, because of... Well, let's read one. You'll understand why.
So Seeks of the Dead is whenever...
Increasing Ambition.
It's a 4 and a black sorcery. Search your library for a card and put that card into your hand. If Increasing Ambition was cast from a graveyard, instead search your library for two cards and put those cards in your hand, then shuffle your library. So it has flashbacks, so you can play 7 and a black if you don't have Kess out. However, for 4 and a black, if you're able to tutor up two cards with this, holy moly, that's... pretty good. That's one mana more than Demonic Tutor, two of them.
I mean, it's basically balanced so that you pay 5 mana, you get one card, and then you pay 7 mana from your graveyard
to get two.
But you break it by like getting it into your graveyard somehow, maybe without even casting it, and then paying 5 because of Kess, you don't have to pay the flashback cost, and getting two cards.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Seems pretty nuts.
This deck can very easily be built to be very combo heavy because, like, the fact that you get to reuse so many
all
of
your tutors,
has the best tutors in the format in these colors, makes it like... I once again leaned away from that, and theoretically that could be maybe what replaces the extra turn kind of version of the deck.
I mean, you have like some tutors, though. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you got Demonic Tutor. And
I think you play – oh, I have the tutors in the deck, but, like, now I'm just getting, like, I only have 5 threats in the deck, so let me get one of those.
Right.
Or I want this answer to this situation. So there's definitely a combo version of this deck that I think I would say build. It's just it depends on how punished you are in your play group for going infinite.
And the red one is Increasing Vengeance. You've got it right there.
This one's sweeter.
Yeah.
The other one's just really good. This one does stupid things. Increasing Vengeance is red, instant, copy target, instant or sorcery spell you control. If Increasing Vengeance was cast from your graveyard, copy that spell twice instead. You may choose new targets for that copy's flashback 5.
So this is an instant. However, with Kess out, you can only do this from on your turn. Otherwise, you just have the ability on everyone else's
but
turn.
But forking
for
twice
more,
for 2 mana...
Yeah, that's absurd.
Insane.
That's absurd. It's a 1 mana fork, essentially.
Like the Time Warp and this for 7 is like insane. Or like I just will one day hope I get to cast Cruel Ultimatum on
Expropriate.
Why? No.
Oh, yeah,
Expropriate, fork it twice for 2 more mana.
You just have to resolve that card once you win.
By
the
way, I've never cast Expropriate and had to resolve it, not one, so.
Yeah, like Cruel Ultimatum seems like a night. Like, where, like, instead of doing it one person,
oh,
I get to do it to 3.
Nice. Your idea of nice.
Dude, the mana cost of that is absurd, though. You're paying, like, 5 red.
4 red. Well, that's why I have mana geyser in the deck.
You need 9
right.
mana total. It's
right.
EDH. You ritual twice, and yeah. you got it.
Tons of red. But, yeah, that is pretty absurd. I mean, you just have a lot of high-power spells. Even if you're just doing, yeah, a time warp and taking 3 extra turns, that's pretty good.
That's where, like, mana geyser or dark ritual really shine, right?
Because yeah, it's like you get the do crazy.
You mana geyser, and all of a sudden, you, a card you wouldn't normally play, you have enough mana to cast a extra turn spell and forget twice.
Right.
Right.
You know?
I do think mana geyser is...
You can only cast one of those out of your graveyard, I know, but... It's not too hard to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you have a card in your hand, you can cast it. Yeah. I think Mana Geyser is the most underplayed ritual in Commander.
It's like so good in Commander just because there's so many players.
It's so good. Right. I mean, I remember playing in the Commander in Conspiracy yeah. 1. Mana Geyser, sorcery, 3 red, red. Add red to your mana pool for each tapped land your opponents control. So sometimes you just get like 30 mana.
Yeah. Which I and it's great.
Yeah.
And bad for your opponents. Fruit tapped out. That's why you have 30 of it.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, I think Mana Geyser might be one of the best red Commander cards. Like, not top 10, but I would.
It's real red ramp. It's a little situational, but, I mean, that's a lot of power.
Yeah, I would say in a lot of decks, it's just too, like, one time is just not enough. But the fact that you can reuse it in this deck really puts it in the realm of, like, broken.
Right. And yeah. I think what you want to do with your deck needs to have big things it wants to do.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I have it in, I have a Bor my red-green deck is Borby.
Borborygmos.
Borborygmos, thank you. Never going to say his name correctly. I'm not even going to say my own
You've
name
You've killed
correctly.
Him with me many times and yet still can't say it.
Mana Geyser is really good in that deck because you yeah. want to be able to cast him and then cast one of your return a bunch of lands from your graveyard to your hand spells in the same turn and then right. you can kind of combo out.
You know what? It's a really good just general thought, which is that so often the way you win in Commander is like how many times in a game are you like, I just need to find a point where I can cast these two things. And Mana Geyser, you don't care about the card disadvantage very often later in the game. You just need to burst forward suddenly to have your chance. And you lose a lot of games where you're like, I just don't ever get to quite enough mana to be able to play a 7-drop, then a 4-drop or something.
Right.
You know, in the correct order. And Mana Geyser can kind of just do that.
There you go.
Yep. So, yeah, pretty interesting. I like that thought process. Let's get to the other card that we Another thought we were talking
key
about.
Card.
Yeah,
this Secrets of the Dead?
This is a cool card, yeah.
I really like this card. By the way, we didn't talk about it, but you have a few enchantments in here as well. You've got... 4 enchantments.
Yeah, and most of them are win conditions on right. game plan. Yeah. And this one is every time you cast a spell with cast, you draw a card. I had this and the Burning Vengeance, which was the other one we talked about. And Burning Vengeance doesn't end up doing that much, though I can imagine that getting slided into this deck eventually in the long run just because it's
yeah.
cute. And like it's going to be one of those things where I'm going to have it in play one time and just destroy every opponent with it.
Even if you're just removing one very annoying utility creature, like kill that Fate Stitcher, get rid right. of that Deathrite Shaman, get rid of the Oracle of Moldiah, Azusa. There are so many different things that this can still nail that are very powerful in Commander.
Let's read the card really quick.
Secrets of the Dead, 2 and a blue enchantment. Whenever you cast a spell from your graveyard, draw a card. So Burning Vengeance, Burning Vengeance is about doing 2 damage to a creature or a player. Secrets of the Dead just gets you cards.
One is just draw a card, the other one is shock. And right. and the most blue and red thing you can do.
Drawing cards is better than shock in Commander here.
I agree.
I think it's better in all formats.
Depends on how fast the format is.
Depends how cheap. Yeah. If they are both, if you have draw one card for one blue or do 2 damage for one red,
they're about equal in most formats, but not Commander. Because 2 damage is actually 1 damage.
So it's a thing that no one's gonna get rid of, and through the game you're just gonna get value forever. It's not even like library. What's the other 2 and blue enchantment that people can pay one to let you not draw cards?
Rhystic Study.
Yeah. It's like a Rhystic Study. It does a lot of the things that a Rhystic Study does, but people just won't pay attention to it happening
because
you're not reminding them every spell they cast. Like, hey, you didn't pay one.
Hey, I have a Rhystic Study. Hey, by the way, I have a Rhystic Study.
And so, like, the fact they're just like, oh, but cast a spell, I get a draw card. And, like, it's such a, like, a personal thing you're doing that people are just not going to, like, really think, like, oh, he drew 30 cards off that.
A lot of value off this thing, too, over the long run.
See, I've been looking for a spot to play this card because my Mizzix deck can't really run it because of all the X spells. But this deck, it's perfect. It's Mizzix's Mastery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. I'll read it again because I'm there. 3 and a red for a sorcery. Exile target card that's an instant or sorcery from your graveyard. For each card exiled this way, copy it, and you may cast the copy without paying its mana cost. So for 4 mana, you can essentially choose a Kes. You can use Kes's ability in a bit of a way, but it's free.
Well, but free. So like all of those dumb giant spells that generally ruin people's days, you can cast for 4 mana, which is like an insane value on this. And on top of that, this is a great thing to increasing vengeance. Increasing vengeance.
Double fork it.
Where you get like three of these, where you get Clone Legion or any time extra turn effect or.
But
like,
the real thing is the overload cost on this baby.
If you ever cast this for overload, you win.
So it's five red, and you exile all the instants and sorceries from your graveyard and cast them for free. I mean, it's not, again, Mana Geyser.
Yeah.
You can cast Mana Geyser from your graveyard. So you could have cast it already this game, you know. Cast it again with Kessa's ability, then use it to cast Mizzix's Mastery, and whatever you've got in your graveyard, instance, and Sorcerer's Rise, you just cast them all.
I will be doing those two things in one turn.
Especially with a Mana Geyser.
Actually, Dark Ritual will do it as long as you've got the
it
red
in your hand. Yeah.
Mana Geyser is not hard to hit 8 mana. That's like on the lower side of things.
Right. Easy. Especially and it's all like the reason it's all red is why where it's beneficial.
Yeah.
Right.
Mizzix's Mastery is going to win a lot of games in the cast deck. Yeah, for sure.
Here's a fun one: the creature that I didn't think about, but it actually matches the
one of the six creatures
theme
in the deck.
Yeah. And it's a very recent creature. It's from Eldritch Moon. It is Docent of Perfection. You want to read it?
Yeah. Docent of Perfection is 3 blue insect horror. Flying, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 blue human wizard creature token onto the battlefield. Then if you control 3 or more wizards, transform Docent of Perfection. And then it flips to final iteration. It is an Eldrazi insect. Flying wizards you control get +2/+1 and have flying. They become Delver of Secrets.
Yeah, it's flying and has a text. It's not flying wizards you control.
Yeah.
All wizards you control get +2/+1 and flying.
And then whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 blue human wizard creature token on the battlefield. So
you make 3/2s with flyers every time you make
It
is literally like the final iteration of the Delver of Secrets.
It's now Delver of Secrets is birthing more Delver of Secrets. Yeah. That whole thing that they did with Shadow of Innistrad of that like vertical cycle eventually was definitely one of Nicol Bolas's.
Hold on.
They took down Nicol
Bolas behind me.
Nobody panicked.
Did you actually say Nicol Bolas?
Yeah. No, it was a little late.
I heard it. I heard it happen. I knew.
He
I
worked
knew
it in. I mean, no, he totally said it.
Yeah.
That's what caused it. Bolas heard us. It was like, I'm out of here.
I am the premier Grixis cards. Don't talk about Delver in my presence.
Okay, did we make it halfway through the episode so that in case you're listening to this in your car or, you know, not watching the video, a little piece of our background fell down.
Yep, Nicol Bolas. There's a Nicol Bolas behind us. He's pretty much controlling what's going on here.
So technical difficulties.
God, Pharaoh, and
please stand
technical
by.
Difficulties.
And we have
stand
to,
by.
You know.
Beep.
We already talked about Cool Ultimatum a little bit, but let's read the card because you did reference it, and definitely increasing ambitioning this thing.
Oh my gosh.
Or increasing vengeancing this thing.
Yeah.
And casting
or
three of it.
Casting it turn
or
and
just,
then having cast let you recast it again. Like
that's a good point.
I don't think I've ever lost a game that I've cast Cruel Ultimatum once and I can cast
Commander,
it multiple
you can
times.
You
oh, totally. Yeah, in Commander, it's not nearly as powerful. And in this deck, it's a little worse because I don't have many creatures. But Cruel Ultimatum is blue, black, red. So a lot of very specific mana.
Seven mana.
Target opponent sacrifices a creature, discards 3 cards, then loses 5 life. Man. You return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand, draw 3 cards, then gain 5 life.
Not many creatures coming from your graveyard to your hand in this deck. However, the fact that, look, you don't play this card in Commander because you target one person, everyone goes, ha ha, nice, they're at war. But you cast this, you Burning Vengeance.
You just cast it again in your graveyard.
This thing. Yeah, you cast it again.
You fork it.
Drawing 3 cards and gaining 5 life while having a specific person discard 3 cards and lose 5 life and sack a creature is like
pretty good.
It's not very nice.
Why would you do such a thing? Well,
that's why Nicol Bolas fell.
That's true.
He's like, they're about to talk about me.
The funniest thing about Cruel Ultimatum from when it was in standard perspective is Cruel Ultimatum and Nicol Bolas Planeswalker, the first time he was printed as a Planeswalker, were both printed within 2 sets of each other. And this immediately negated Nicol Bolas ever seeing real standard play. People would play him, but it was more because they wanted to and less because it was the better option because Cruel Ultimatum cost, I think, 1 less even and was just did more right now and that you wanted to do. So like Nicol Bolas was just kind of like not as good as his ultimatum.
As his spell.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I don't even think he might be on the original one. I can't tell if this is a promo. I think this is a promo.
He's
on the original one?
Yeah. Almost positive. Yeah. I'll look at it while we talk about these next cards.
All right, so those are the cards in the current deck list that we're going to highlight. Obviously, again, you can look at the full deck list and the show notes. I thought it'd be fun for Jimmy and I to throw our hat in the ring, maybe throw out a couple cards we might consider in the deck.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong. The original card does not have Nicol Bolas.
I didn't think it did. It has like a demon on the ground.
Yeah, it's some kind of demon. Yeah, it's because every single edition since then has had except
that one
for,
iconic art,
except
with,
for the dual decks version.
With Sarkin,
yeah.
Like,
with Sarkin. My brains.
It's very cruel of Nicol Bolas to give
whatever
Sarkin
to give such an ultimatum.
He should be like, Sarkin, you're not actually a dragon, dude. Come on. He's like, but I want to fly. Okay. Yeah, I'm getting Vorthosy about it.
He is now.
And he is now. I know.
He wasn't
I know.
Then, though.
He has the potential to be the first five-color planeswalker.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Because he's been in all four colors other than the one. He's never been.
Oh, that's true. Sarkin Unbroken. Yeah.
But he's now in love with a blue-white planeswalker. So, like, bringing them together, all five.
By the way, we will also say that Kessler, of everyone that has ever come on the show, is by far the best person at predicting things.
Oh,
yeah. So, that's kind of Kessler's thing, is like putting together all the pieces and predicting stuff.
I'm
yeah.
wrong, too. I mean, like, it's really, you know.
Well, but if you throw enough stuff out there,
yeah,
then you're like Nostradamus.
Yeah, you're Nostradamus.
Yeah, exactly. You know, nobody remembers the stuff that's wrong. They only remember the stuff that's right.
Let's talk about some cards that we thought about that aren't actually on your list. We're going to put you on the hot seat, and you have to justify why they're not there.
Is that how we're doing it? I wasn't going to do it in that manner, but okay.
Alex Kessler.
Okay. Stats. No?
Yep.
Stats?
I got that confused with
the cards that we think might not maybe in the list.
I would like to use a lifeline.
All right. Who are you calling?
I'm going to call Craig Blanchett.
Craig?
Does this card have infect on it?
Yeah, none of these are infect.
No. Oh. So cut it? Okay, cool. Yeah, that's why I didn't have infect on
perfect,
it.
Perfect. Right. We're not recommending any infect cards.
All right. Number one. Pyromancer's Goggle.
So that one is mostly because this deck didn't have a lot of red cards in the end. I think I had it in the list for a long time, and then
cool
I like
ultimatum.
Counted one.
Just
but
increasing
for free,
vengeance.
Twice. But like this is a 5-mana ramp card that like most of the time is just going to be a much worse ramp card. And if I leaned with heavier, if I had
more
wheel
red.
Effects and I had more red, I totally, it was in the deck. Until
wheel
I,
of
like,
Fortune twice.
Counted that I
and
had
then
like
do it again.
Six
right,
red cards
right.
in the deck.
So Pyromancer's Goggles is a 5-mana artifact that you can tap to add red to your mana pool. However, if it's used to cast a red instant or sorcery, you get to copy it and choose new targets for the copy.
You copy it on both ends, right? When you cast it and then when you cast it with Kess.
Yes.
Right.
So you can copy something multiple times. However, your deck, it's like Wheel of Fortune.
Blasphemous Act doesn't even really
count.
Yeah.
Cool Automata Mana Geyser. Mizzix Mastery, Wheel of Fortune, Chaos War.
Hold on.
Mizzix Mastery is not. Oh, it's pretty good with. Yeah,
I mean, these cards are all absurd.
Sure, but that's 5 cards. So, like.
Yeah, it's true.
True.
I'd have to draw it and one of these
it's
5
really
cards.
10 cards because you can use them all twice.
It's true.
A good defense.
And Blasphemous Act of the deck, but Blasphemous Act.
You don't
want to
double
anything.
It up.
Yeah.
You
know.
I mean,
well,
you can.
Something might have.
I've faced 10 10s before.
Yeah,
2020.
Yeah, 2020. Okay, next card. Epic Experiment.
This card never works.
That's my, like, I like, and maybe this is the deck
this
to do
is
it
the deck you've got the rituals?
Yes. So, like,
you
it's possible
it?
That this
yeah,
is the
true.
Deck for it.
Yeah.
I, like,
that's what I think every time.
Put it in blue red decks before and then immediately cut it when I ever have
this,
it in my hand.
This is how I feel about Mizzix's Mastery. They're the same deck as Epic Experiment. Like, if there's not a bunch of X spells, but there's enough spells, you want one, I think you probably want the other.
I think there's an argument that this could be the Epic Experiment deck. I do love Epic Experiment.
Let's read
so.
It. Let's read it. It's Villainous Wealth kind of ish.
Yeah. X blue red sorcery exile the top X card. Cards of your library. For each instant and sorcery card with converted mana cost X or less among them, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost, then put all cards exiled that way that weren't cast into your graveyard. So you are getting a lot of cards into your graveyard, which is good.
I think you can actually cast this for less than you would think because you don't need to get a ton out of it for it to be good.
Right,
if you get two spells
it.
And you mill.
But the problem is the converted mana cost issue because the converted mana costs have to be less than
right,
X as well. And
right.
so much of this deck
is like huge.
8 drop spells like it very quickly. I think I can actually look. There's
a lot of
11,
3, 4, and 5.
There is 9-8 drops.
20 cards over 5.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Wow.
So, like, if I don't cast this for 7, it's bad. If I cast it for more than 7,
I feel like with the rituals,
right.
though, it's not that hard to go ritual. Off
oh,
the
no,
mana
totally.
You got from the ritual the second time, then into the Epic Experiment.
And if I were to build this deck to be more stormy than it is, the stormy version, I think Epic Experiment is a shoo-in. And that's partly just I didn't want
well,
to build Stormy's
going
to
have a bunch of little
yeah,
yeah.
so like
yeah.
I think that's part of it.
That was kind
of
my
it.
Next thing actually was like it seems like something like Brainstorm's like really good. Like I'm not a big Brainstorm and Commander person, but in this deck the fact that I can use my Brainstorm twice seems really good.
I would have Preordain and Ponder before Brainstorm.
Really?
I think Brainstorm is
the
bad
ability to shuffle?
Without ways to shuffle your deck consistently and because I mean I mean
you're going
to
have fetch lands.
Yeah, you'll
have
fetch lands
yeah.
and like it's something you could play with but it Preordain and Ponder are just going to be better than Brainstorm, I feel like, in Commander. And even those, I don't know if I would play them most of the time. I have Top. I have other ones that do that more repeatably. Hmm. There's definitely an argument for it because they're early game. They're easy. They're something you can cast off of
they
for a
They even
turn
out
four,
all
five.
Your draws.
Yeah. And I kind of leaned more towards the Tutor side versus these. I don't know. I think that it's definitely a decision you can make.
What about signets?
There was a point of this deck that there were a bunch of artifacts, and I realized I just, like, so many of the things I was putting into it, the B-win conditions, wanted me to cast as many spells as possible, even ignoring her specific effect, that getting – I cut down signets, I cut down on the two-mana artifacts.
So how does the deck win?
It wins through multiple cards. One of them is just casting, you know
– Well, obviously taking multiple turns.
Taking multiple turns helps. I don't think that ever actually wins the game. You have to do something else. But
you can hit them for three in the air.
Can kill one person. I mean, this deck will definitely benefit from later game effects where you get to the late game where other people lower. So, like, cool, Ultimatum twice is 10 damage. That helps. But
Dosin of Perfection is a good one.
Yeah, Dosin of Perfection gets there. Metallurgic Summoning is the thing that can kill a person pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's a good one. Especially if it's extra turn. Now all these guys can attack also and they're huge.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Rise of the Dark Realms is really good.
Especially with all of your board wipes.
I have a bunch of, like, little steel effects or clone effects that are, like, spells that kind of can be used on opponents' things.
It feels like the deck might want a couple, like, more looting effects because you have some Wheel of Fortune stuff. But if you're having that many high drops, you might want to be like, I'm just going to dump this, get a better card
I can see that being a direction.
I mean, you have Kid Jace that'll loot for you. Yeah. You have a few, but it might want a few
I think
more.
You're just, like, more wheel effects in general. Or, you know, I had a Faithless Looting in it for a long time. And then, like, the first version of the deck, and generally when I build a new deck, I want to lean in.
You're right.
More
you
want
to really want, like, make sure the main thing works, right?
What's
right.
going on here, and what do I need to make it more efficient and better at what it's doing? And that looting effects are definitely one of these. More rituals, I think we brought here. I mean, the problem with rituals is the more rituals you add, the more you want it to be stormy.
Be big stuff.
And like, I do have one, so I have the cannon. Which is not—it's not called a cannon. It's a Aetherworks Reservoir.
Mm-hmm. That is a cannon.
That's like the one storm card.
That's the one storm card in the deck. And because just sometimes you're going to cast a few spells and gain life incidentally, which is fine. And then also just generally in Commander,
there's a way to kill somebody.
There's a way to
if you're taking five extra turns in a row, you may be able to get there with Aetherflux Reservoir. Just sort of like you get your hand perfect, and then boom, you cast 10 spells.
Yeah,
I think
I have enough rituals in the deck and other things that kind of just will build up to itself. Like technically, Soul Ring is a ritual.
Right.
You know, it's better than a ritual.
Well, not technically.
Okay. Not literally, but like it does what a ritual does the turn you cast it. It makes one mana, you make two mana.
Right.
So that's like one of the win conditions. So there's a few different ways of going about it. It definitely wants to take advantage of other people stumbling, though. And then there's just Profane Command, Exsanguinate, like just the once I make a bunch of mana with either the rituals or I have the Cabal Coffers Urborg combo. Right. Those are just the late game easy way to kind of just be like, everyone loses 10 life. I have 40 life now.
Fork it twice.
Get it, yeah.
Yeah, I think this deck is weak to like very early aggression before you're able to really set up. But at a certain point, I feel like you could, with something like this, with the right kind of ramp and with these rituals, you could kind of take over the game by turn 6 or 7.
And it is why I have 6 board wipes plus the tutors to find those board wipes plus another 5 targeted spot removal. Like I lean generally towards more kill things, kill them dead.
Have answers.
Effects. And like I literally went over because I have a Geist deck that's probably my premier deck, which I mentioned on this cast before.
Yes. You're all foil.
Went through it yesterday and I was like, oh, I think I have 3 too many board wipes, and I think I'm at 14 of them. So, like,
wow.
You need to take a step back and, like, the thing I've been noticing with it is often I'm just like, oh, I'm just killing everything and not doing anything. So this deck could lean towards that. That's my natural tendency is to do more controlly things and less winning. And it definitely might need some more thorough win conditions.
All right. Cool. Before we wrap up here, let us... I have a question. Like, where do you think a good version of this deck falls power level-wise? I mean, you know, it's probably not up there with the Xurs and the, like, top tier stuff. I mean, that's what I'm assuming.
I think it's just under that, if not there.
You think it could be tier 1?
I think it could be tier 1. And, like, obviously I'm named after it, it's named after me, depending on who came first.
Well, if that's the only criteria, then you're named after it.
Yeah.
Snapcaster Mage is really good.
Yeah.
The fact that I can tutor, Demonic Tutor twice in a turn is an insane effect. There's a version of this deck that just has every tutor and then combo pieces to find with it and then ways to protect those things. And Grixis is the best colors to do that in.
I think the fact that any ritual is 2 rituals.
Yeah.
There's a version with rituals and tutors.
Yep.
that means I can I have a ton of mana super early that I shouldn't have, and I can use that mana to tutor for the pieces and play it right now.
Right.
Yeah, it's very powerful. Yeah. It might not be that high. I think it has target problems. Like, it is a big target on its face, which is why when you look at the creature thing, Torrential Gearhulk, Snapcaster Mage, Jace Friend, Prodigy are all in the deck because they at least let you kind of do a little bit of what she's doing.
Well, also, you're going to want to be like in positions often, I think, where you're like, man, she only lets me play one card per turn out of my graveyard. I want two of those.
Right.
Right.
Well,
right.
Snappy lets me play another one or blah, blah, blah.
And you can kind of use her as a Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah.
You can cast her on turn six and get a two mana spell. You can cast her on turn 10 as the first time and get a six mana spell if you hit your land drops. So,
right.
Like, there's arguments that she's just kind of Snapcaster Mage the commander at a bare minimum. And
which is pretty good.
Minus
which
slash,
is really good.
Yeah.
And then there's the repeatable factor of it. I think she's really high. And Grixis is like, it's something that commander has kind of been missing, I think. There hasn't been a low converted mana cost, generically good Grixis commander.
Classically,
so many of them. But even Marchesa has, like, you want to be...
She's not top tier, though.
You want a game plan with Marchesa, too.
Right, right.
Like, she leans you in a direction. You could just play this as just the commander in your good Grixis deck that just has the tutors, some ritual, like, some good spells.
You actually don't need 43 instants in sorceries because she can only give you one per turn. Like, you could play 20.
Yeah, you could do Grixis.
This is totally
good
me
stuff.
Leaning into, like...
I mean, I think this is the right way to build it, but I'm saying she's still going to be good in sort of a good stuff Grixis
right. And like there will be versions of this that are just like, I cast Demonic Tutor twice this turn and I get my combo, I win.
Yeah.
And like, and I have all of the rest of my spells are protection for that. And you can't do anything because I get it twice.
Right.
And then I'm excited to build the cycling version of this deck.
Yeah, that's gonna be
cycler instants and sorceries, and then I'm just cycling through and then recasting the good ones for their effect out of the graveyard because I put them there for cycling. And I just like the idea.
And you have a lot of good, really good cycling trigger cards now between all the sets.
Oh, true. Good point. Yeah, your Archfiend of Ifnir's and your Drakehaven.
Drakehaven seems really sweet.
The sad part is you don't get the white one, which is like it's the best one, but is in the worst colors for making cycling commander decks.
Right.
So like, it's just, I don't think it'll, which is fine. Maybe that it's like too
powerful.
I could
build a 5-color cast deck.
That's not surprising.
I don't, it doesn't feel like that would work, but all right, don't get excited, everybody. Let me think about it before I commit to doing that.
That's 15 cycle lands.
If you are thinking about building this deck, though, make sure you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's going to be the best place to pre-order and order all of this new product right here and to get this wizard deck. It's got some awesome cards in here, I'll just say that much. So you definitely want to check it out. And, you know, if you're interested in building Kess, cardkingdom.com/commandzone.
Build me.
Make it.
I challenge you.
Build
get
him. There.
Build it. And then once you build it, what you're going to want to do, can you hand me the wizard one?
Yes.
So I got the right one here. What you're going to want to do is buy the cool matching deck box and the cool matching, the cool matching sleeves.
Yeah.
And then you can also buy the cool matching playmat, all by Ultra Pro.
I'll stick with the Eclipse.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Although these are sort of the Eclipse technology, there. So
they started doing that.
Awesome. They're glossy back, so I'm not going to lie and say that the shuffle feel is as good. The Eclipse has that really awesome shuffle feel. These ones are glossy, so they'll be a little bit more sticky, but they do last way longer. The old Ultra Pro like sleeves used to like sort of, you know, they'd catch and they'd rip early.
Right.
These last a lot longer, so I've been more happy with sort of their Sriracha sleeves are the ones that I really like.
Of the new commanders, what ones, I mean, like, I know obviously mine's this one, but which one are you guys most excited to build?
I really like Markov. I think Edgar is one of the best Marduk Vampire. Commanders I've ever seen.
His art is amazing.
Yeah,
he's
really
like
great.
In the chair and it looks all gothic. I'm like,
I mean, I'll probably build Ramos too.
I think Ramos, because it's 5-color, is I'm probably there with Jimmy.
Yeah.
I'm also pretty excited about that Marisil, which is the...
The cage counter guy.
Yeah, so, and it gets the activated abilities of other things, which activated abilities is like my favorite thing in Magic, so no surprise there. so that's probably, the wizard deck in general, and again, no surprise, because it's the tricky one.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, tricky wizards.
Wizards tricky? Is that a thing that classically they're known for being?
Well,
is that something
I don't know. Are they? That seems...
Do they arrive exactly when they're meant to?
Wizard is never late. Well, to the listeners, let us know who you are excited to build around, and also what you thought of Kessler's build of Kess Dissident Mage. How would you build her instead?
Please, please yell at me on Twitter. I like being yelled at.
How do they find you to yell at you on Twitter?
I am at Kess Wiley, so K-E-S-S, like the card, Wiley, W-Y-L-I-E.
Yeah,
because you're Wiley like a wizard.
Yeah, it's also my middle name. And Kess is my last name. Well, the first
half. Kessler, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We call him Kessler, but his real name's Alex.
We'll probably start referring to him as Wiley now.
There's a surprising amount of people that just call me Kess. All my college friends call me Kess. A chunk of not family members, because they have the same
last
name.
They have the same name. That would be weird.
Someone, hey, some Kess, people call my sister Kess and me Kess, and it's not okay. It's really confusing. But now, just me. I claim it. I'm the only one that plays Magic, and so there we go.
Yeah, it's true.
I win. Take that, other Kesslers. Calling you out.
All right, now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. Kess, we always let our guests pick something cool. What's something cool outside of Magic that you're having fun with, or you think is cool, or you want to share with the audience?
So I recently did this, I don't know, there was a Facebook post of list your top five things of things and whatever.
Right.
And one of them was top five things, period. I was thinking, what are my five? Magic's up there. Star Wars is up there. I said Magic first, right?
No, I don't.
I know. It's yeah.
You don't have a podcast about any of the other things on the list, do you?
I would have, 30 other people didn't have Star Wars. Thousands of people have
thousands,
Star Wars.
Thousands, yeah. Not 30.
Actually, come up with a reason for me to be special in the Star Wars universe.
Kessler is the biggest Star Wars fan I know, and I know a lot of Star Wars fans.
That's stressful.
You better keep it up, man.
I know. Yeah, okay. But Avatar The Last Airbender, and it's a series I just kind of finished doing the
first
run through. Not the movie.
The movie
is my least favorite thing ever created.
it's a different list.
And then I'm just started literally 2 days ago, because I just finished my, I think, 10th rewatch of the original series, watching The Legend of Korra, which is their sequel series, which is higher production value. The characters are not as enjoyable, but
they also didn't know they were going to have more than one season. So the first season is kind of like three seasons jammed into one.
And the one thing with that first season, and it's something that I hate, and it's actually my biggest, I love Marvel movies, but it's my biggest complaint with them, is they kill the villain off. And spoilers.
You don't get Darth Vader that way.
You you have this habit. If the villain dies every turn, you don't. That's one of the reasons I loved the new Spider-Man, was that they let that villain survive. And that means that – and
spoiler,
he was great.
Alert.
Spoiler. Well, yeah. Sorry. Spoilers. Spoilers for everything we're talking about.
Marvel rarely kills people, though.
No, every villain's died in every movie other than him and Loki.
Loki's still in. Yeah,
every single villain
has – and Loki's the only good villain.
They all have the chance to come back, though, in this – I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Superheroes come back. That's the problem with villains in Marvel, though. And my thesis statement on that. But we're getting back to Avatar Last Airbender. It's gorgeous. And the characters are so good. And
I agree.
The story arc in the first series is so amazing. If you haven't watched it, the first five episodes have the lowest budget, and they feel the most young of the series. So when I've gotten people into it, that's always the first barrier.
You just got to get them through those
you
first five.
And they're only 23 minutes long.
Just watch the first
long.
Season at the very least. I think it's one of my favorite anime shows of all time. So
the last season is maybe one of the most beautiful. It's not anime, but we can talk
about
it.
Animated,
okay,
sorry.
Cool.
Trust me, I know the difference.
It is one of the most beautiful. The finale in that show, one of the big fights at the very end, is one of the most beautiful things I think I've ever seen. And it ended around Dark Knight, and I had a serious conversation when I watched the finale. What was better? And I think the season finale, the three-part episode, is better than The Dark Knight.
I would put Avatar over Dark Knight without even blinking.
Yeah.
Wait, The Dark Knight, the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not even that good.
No. Right.
If you take Heath Ledger out of that movie, that movie's not even that good.
It's a mediocre Batman movie.
Heath Ledger's awesome, but yeah.
I think he's carrying that movie on his back. Heath Ledger in that movie might be one of the best performances in the history of acting, but the movie itself around him is fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, we've gone through Marvel, DC, and Avatar: The Last Airbender in one conversation.
But you're gonna like our next segment.
This is a really good
because
segment.
Because this is probably your favorite segment on. Well, you never watched the show, but if you did, this would be your favorite segment on the whole show, because this is the part where we recommend that you should listen or watch our sister podcast. Mostly listen, because they don't do as much YouTube anymore. And our sister podcast is
The Masters of Modern.
And where can you find it?
On collected.company.
And what is the Twitter account that they might want to follow if they want to check out the Masters of Modern podcast?
At the MMcast. Though, I actually recommend go to the Facebook group. So we had a Facebook page for a long time, and pages are terrible. But Facebook.
Wait, we have a page. It's not terrible. It's a great place for people to gather and get news updates. It's not a good discussion, however.
Yes, pages are good for forward-facing functionality,
right?
But groups are better for community building,
right?
And our group that we launched 3 months ago is already at 700 followers, and is growing up, is going great, and people are talking
Humble
about Modern
Breaks.
All the time there. And if you want to get into Modern, or you just want to talk about Magic in general, it's a great place to go.
So find the Masters of Modern Facebook group.
Yes, the official Masters of Modern Facebook group is what it's called.
We're thinking about it as well for the Command Zone. Ben Bateman, Alex Kessler, they break down everything Modern. They do awesome deck techs. They talk about PPTQs. They talk about Pro Tour results.
Yeah.
It's great.
We do modern content.
Set reviews.
They talk about this thing called Superior Burning Cocoa, which I'm pretty sure I still have no idea what it is.
When you heat up your hot chocolate too much, it burns your tongue. Yeah,
it's better than all other hot cocoa.
But it's hot. Yeah, it's
superior.
The heat of it is superior.
It is.
You'll never know because your taste buds are burnt.
Okay, so make sure you check them out at the MMCast or at collected.company. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Big thanks. Sorry.
Yeah, way to go, Terry.
Yeah, Terry.
Way to deal with all these cameras.
Okay. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Cards animations, which are at the beginning and end of every one of our shows at Living Cards MTG. Make sure you go to youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast to watch those videos. They're worth it, I swear.
All right. Kes, thank you for being on our show.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Woo!
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.